So chapter begins with Arjuna's question. It's his second question in the Bhagavad Gita. Please let us chant together.
Arjuna vacha jayasi chetkarmanasti mata buddhi janardana chatkim karmane gohe mam niyojasi keshava.
Arjuna said, O Janardan, O Keshav, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruitive work? So, we discussed this a little bit the other day, and I was kind of dramatically presenting Arjuna's confusion with a little comedy mixed in. But that, hopefully that will give you some impression in your mind. Arjuna is comparing two things, buddhi and karma. So Krishna obviously described karma in chapter 2, in the Karmakanda section, and also in the Karma Yoga section, or Buddhi Yoga. And simultaneously, he stressed jnana or buddhi in the Samkhya Yoga section, in the Buddhi Yoga section, and particularly at the end of the Buddhi Yoga section, when he asked about the symptoms of a person in transcendence. Actually, he mentioned the word buddhi, I think, in the last 33 verses, 10 times. So he's stressing intelligence, sense control, a kind of sattvic, pensive state of a meditative person, kind of inactive yoga. Generally, people who are so peaceful and who control the senses, they practice jnana yoga or ashtanga yoga often. So stressing buddhi and sense control, intelligence and peace, you know, he said many times also, only that person becomes peaceful, right? In many different verses. So naturally Arjuna was kind of attached to that idea. And then he couldn't incorporate, why does Krishna still want me to fight if he's telling me all of these other things? In other words, you know, if you think that I'm not qualified for bhakti, Krishna, then at least engage me in jnana or buddhi. Don't engage me just in some horrible karma. This is his idea. In other words, Arjuna is thinking, what does karma have to do with renunciation? Or especially his karma, his fighting. What does fighting have to do with renunciation or bhakti? So if you want to, you can actually go back and look at, let's see, from 39, you can see the word buddhi is twice in 39. Yeah. Again in text 41, twice. Again in text 44, once. In text 47, he stresses that Arjuna should do his karma. Karma neva adhikaraste. When you are qualified for karma. And then 49, the word buddhi is again twice. And there he says, you know, get rid of your karma. Just stay away from karma. Dharena yavara karma, buddhi yoga dhananjaya. So you can see how it's confusing. He told them in 47, do your karma. In 49, he said, throw away your karma, far away. Right? Right? And 50, again, the word buddhi. And 51 again, buddhi. And 52 again, the word buddhi. And 53 again, buddhis. Samadha vachala buddhis. So in this way, then from 55 onwards, he's also describing the sthitadhir muni, tasya pragya, which means the same as buddhi, pragya, right? Tasya pragya pratishtita, be situated in intelligence. And the sthitadhir muni is free from attachment, fear, and anger, but in order to fight, you have to be angry, right? Again, 58, tasya pragya pratishtita. Again, 61, tasya pragya pratishtita. Then he describes the mentality of the person who's lost his intelligence and how he falls down. Right, so that's also related. So, and then buddhi in 65, buddhi in 66. Huh? Also 63. So you can see, but at the same time, like text 47, he was directly speaking in the second person. He was telling Arjuna directly. He wasn't talking about a third person or, such a person attains this or such a person attains that. He was looking at Arjuna and saying, your adhikar is karma. And then he starts talking about all these other higher things. So Arjuna is feeling a little discouraged that, so real spiritual life is these higher things, but I have to do this horrible karma. And he gets angry, actually. Not angry, but in a kind of sakyabhav. He's telling Krishna, using the word Janardhan, and Keshava, in a funny way. Because Ardhan also means pain or problem. And Jana means to the people. So he says, oh Janardhan, do you give pain to your devotees? Is this the meaning of your name? Why are you giving me so much pain? I have to fight. And then he says, hey Keshava, no one can neglect your order because you are Keshava. Right? Ka means Brahma, and Isha means Shiva, and Va means controller of. So you're the controller of Brahma and Shiva, so no one can transgress your order. You're the Supreme Lord. So I have to do what you tell me. But it seems that what you're telling me is going to actually hinder my bhakti and my spiritual progress. So why are you telling me these things? So in his distress, Arjuna blamed Krishna for not clearly instructing him or misdirecting him. Although Arjuna accepted Krishna as his guru, but at the same time, he was perceiving Krishna's instructions as a cause of his distress. Maybe something like Bali hearing what Shukracharya was telling him. He thought, this is wrong, right? But of course, Krishna and Arjuna were very good friends, so he's not rejecting him, but he's just confused and he feels frustrated. So Keshava also means that you're the supreme controller over Brahma and Shiva, but I'm the one that has to fight. Therefore, you are Janardhana, the giver of problems. And you're giving me this pain. In the Harivamsa Purana, it's mentioned, which is the kind of corollary to the Mahabharata, or addendum, maybe you could say, to the Mahabharata. There's a verse where Mahadev says, Brahman and I are both born from you. You are thus the controller of us both. That is why you are named Keshava. So that confirms the analysis of Ka, Isha, and Va as Keshava. Harivamsa Pran. Harivamsa is an addendum to Mahabharata.
Ka is Brahma,
Isha is Shiva, and Va means controller or above. Of course, if you look in Krishna Leela, it has a different meaning. I mean, in Braj Leela, like Kesha means hair, and Va means controller. So it means Radharani is controlling Krishna and forcing him to comb her hair. So different meanings. So Prabhupada writes a very clear commentary on this. He says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna, has very elaborately described the constitution of the soul in the previous chapter, with a view to delivering his intimate friend Arjuna from the ocean of material grief. The path of realization has been recommended, Buddha Yoga, or Krishna consciousness. I will skip down to the next part. Arjuna also thought of Krishna consciousness, or Buddha Yoga, or intelligence in spiritual advancement of knowledge. You can see that every time Prabhupada, not every time, but often, when he's describing Buddha Yoga, he has to go through this whole thing, you know, to try to translate it, because it's not so clear what exactly Krishna's talking about. You understand? So if you feel confused about what exactly is Buddha Yoga, don't feel too bad. Right? Because, I mean, I'm not saying Prabhupada's confused about it, but I'm saying that he's also kind of, you can see he's struggling to translate it. Because he has to use three long, it's like two, you know, a whole sentence just to translate. Arjuna also thought of Krishna consciousness, or Buddha Yoga, or intelligence in spiritual advancement of knowledge, as something like retirement from active life and the practice of penance and austerity at a secluded place. In other words, he wanted to skillfully avoid the fighting by using Krishna consciousness as an excuse. But as a sincere student, he placed the matter before his master and questioned Krishna as to his best course of action. In answer, Lord Krishna elaborately explained karma yoga, or working in Krishna consciousness, in this third chapter. So that's the name of this chapter. And after describing all the kind of relationships with the names, and so Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, this is the actual deep meaning of this verse. He says that sattva karma is superior to raja karma. Okay, well, this is kind of that's not going to stay on. Hey, look at that. Land right in the ground. Sattva karma is better than, greater than raja karma. Okay. Jnana is better than sattva karma. So this is like sattva jnana is better than sattva karma. Yeah, I guess we could write it like that, maybe. Maybe that's easier. Huh? Anyway, you could write sattva karma, I guess, here. You can write sattva jnana is greater than sattva karma. That's more simple. Is it clear so far? Of activity, sattva guna is better than rajaguna. And when you're talking about sattva karma, which is the, you know, then sattva jnana is better, because that's the real purpose of the mode of goodness, is to develop knowledge. Sattva sanjayate jnanam. In Bhagavad Gita, so Krishna mentions that. So then, He says, knowledge or jnana is the end result of acting in nishkam karma. And nirgun bhakti is better than jnana. So this is a little, you know, part of the yoga ladder, basically. So this is on the first level, Rajakarma, and then Sattva Karma is higher. And then higher than Sattva Karma is Sattva Jnana. And then higher than, higher than Sattva Jnana is Nirguna Bhakti. So you have 1, 2, 3, and 4. 4 things, basically. One is higher than the next. So, Sattva Karma is actually Nishkam Karma Yoga. Because when someone is working in the mode of goodness, he's detached from the fruits. He's a little attached to the work, but the attachment is minimal, and he's in the mode of goodness. So by working in that way, he gets knowledge. He becomes realized. He gets wisdom. And of course, nirguna bhakti, and then, you know, to get nirguna bhakti, that would take even more time, more advancement. To just realize you're not the body doesn't necessarily mean you're a pure devotee. I mean, it's definitely a help, but it's not. It doesn't guarantee that you're performing shuddha bhakti. Okay? So, Arjuna is, you know, understanding some of these things. Otherwise, he wouldn't have asked this question. He's understanding that there's higher and lower, and that Rajakarma, especially fighting, you know, is the lowest thing, and that Nirguna Bhakti is the highest thing. So he's wondering, and then Krishna's stressing, you know, knowledge and sattvic work, right? Krishna's stressing sattvic, you know, behavior, sattvic peacefulness and sense control. That's all sattvic. And he's stressing knowledge, as we proved already. Buddhi and pragya, tasya pragya pratishtita. So Arjuna is wondering, you know, why is he telling me to do karma? If the goal is bhakti, and better, you know, a way to get there is to do sattva karma, like a Brahmin or a Rishi, and that's what Arjuna wants to do. He wants to do sattva karma, meditating in the forest. And then why is Krishna telling him to fight? Which seems like it's far away, too far away for the goal, from the goal. So Prabhupada said he wanted to skillfully avoid the fighting by using Krishna consciousness as an excuse. Okay. So, text number 2. What's that?
The acts of Brahmana Sattva Karma.
Yeah, of course.
They're not on jnana something bhakti. They're not in jnana or in bhakti.
It depends, or at least they're sattva karma. I mean, his activities are or in the mode of goodness. Whether he's a devotee or not, that's another thing.
Vyami shrenai vavakena buddhim moha yasivame tad ekam vadanis jitya yena shreyoham apnuvam.
My intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Therefore, please tell me decisively which will be most beneficial for me.
Arjuna says, Mohaya Eva,
which means certainly, but it also means like. So he's saying like, I'm not really bewildered, but like similar to bewildered, close to being bewildered. By your Vami Shrenaiva Vakena, by your confusing words. My buddhim is moha siva, almost like bewildered. So therefore, instead of telling me all of these different things in the yoga ladder, tad ekam vadanischitya, just tell me one thing and make it clear, okay? And make it yena shreyoham, for my benefit.
Okay, let's see. Prabhupada writes, in the previous chapter, as a prelude to the Bhagavad Gita, many different paths were explained, such as Sankhya Yoga, Buddhi Yoga, control of the senses by intelligence, work without fruit of desire, and the position of the neophyte. This was all presented unsystematically, right? More or less based on the order of Arjuna's objections. A more organized outline of the path would be necessary for action and understanding. Arjuna therefore wanted to clear up these apparently confusing matters so that any common man could accept them without misinterpretation.
So you could say that it's not really that he's bewildered. He's doing it for others. That's the meaning of the word Eva. Yeah.
Although Krishna had no intention of confusing Arjuna by any jugglery of words, Arjuna could not follow the process of Krishna consciousness either by inertia or by active service. In other words, by his questions, he is clearing the path of Krishna consciousness for all students who seriously want to understand the mystery of the Bhagavad Gita.
So Arjuna is saying, if you think that I'm that, my dear Lord, if you think that I'm unqualified for bhakti, then at least engage me in knowledge. Then give me knowledge so that I can gradually come to the point of bhakti. But why engage me in this passion of fighting? So, now the Lord's answer in text 3.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Lokesmin Vividha Nishtha Pura Prokta Mayanagam Jnana Yogena Sankhyanam Karma Yogena Yoginam.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O sinless Arjuna, I have already explained that there are two classes of men who try to realize the self. Some are inclined to understand it by empirical philosophical speculation, and others by devotional service. Please note, Karma Yoga is being translated as devotional service. Okay? And that's why some of the scholars, they get a little upset at Prabhupada, and they sometimes criticize him. One time, one of his servants brought a searing critique of his Bhagavad Gita to him from some French scholar. And it said that this Bhaktivedanta Swami has changed all the words. Where it says Bhagavan, he puts Krishna, you know, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And wherever it says yoga, karma yoga, he puts devotional service to the Supreme Lord. And Prabhupada said, yes, he has understood what I have done. He's very intelligent. And he said, he's practically the only man who has understood what I have done. And he was very happy, you know.
So, now let's look at the Sanskrit. Loke smin, in this world, nivida nishta, there's two kinds of nishta, or paths, or faith, or positions. Pura prokta mayanaga. I already told you this, Arjun, before, in the previous chapter. Pura prokta. I already said this. Mayanaga, right? That means Arjuna, who is free from sin. Jnana yogena. Okay, here's the two kinds of nishta, all right? Jnana yogena sankhyanam. Means the Sankhyavadis who are fixed in Jnana Yoga, practicing, they're in their position by Jnana Yoga. And the yogis, the Karma Yogis, who are situated in their yoga by Karma Yoga, which is Buddha Yoga or Nishkam Karma Yoga, which is very close to devotional service. And as you have seen already two or three times, Prabhupada says devotional service or Buddha Yoga or, you know, detached work or something, you know. So now let's look at this commentary. In the second chapter, verse 39, right? That was the beginning of the Buddha Yoga section. The Lord explained two kinds of procedures, namely Sankhya Yoga and Karma Yoga, or Buddha Yoga. Okay? Sankhya Yoga and Karma Yoga, parentheses, or Buddha Yoga. Okay, that means Karma Yoga and Buddha Yoga are similar. In this verse, the Lord explains the same thing more clearly. Sankhya Yoga, or the analytical study of the nature of spirit and matter, is a subject matter for persons who are inclined to speculate and understand things by experimental knowledge and philosophy. That's clear. The other class of men work in Krishna consciousness, as it is explained in the 61st verse of the second chapter. Right? We said Matpara, the shloka. Huh? Tani Sarvani. Samyamya. Yeah, matpara. And yeah. So that is the verse which is the first drop of bhakti, right? So here Prabhupada's referring to that. The same principle is more clearly explained in the 61st verse. That means Buddha Yoga or Krishna consciousness. Or more specifically, on Krishna. Right? And in this way, all the senses can be brought under control very easily. Therefore, both the yogas are interdependent as religion and philosophy. Right? Religion is what? And philosophy? Well, philosophy is which yoga? Jnana Yoga. And religion is Karma Yoga. Or Buddha Yoga. Or acting in Krishna consciousness. Right? So, religion without philosophy is sentiment. Or sometimes even fanaticism. While philosophy without religion is mental speculation. Okay? This is a famous statement. Because if you have people practicing religion and there's no philosophy, they get a little off the track. They get too sentimental. And if you have people who are just philosophers and they don't have any religious feelings, then it's just dry and speculative. The ultimate goal is Krishna. So, these things, he says, they're interdependent, karma and jnana. Right? And actually, Nishkam Karma Yoga is a synthesis of both of these things. And actually, bhakti is also a synthesis of jnana and karma. Because in bhakti, you're working for the Lord with knowledge that He is the Supreme and you're His servant. So bhakti is the ultimate synthesis, right? You have Hegel's, kind of philosophical matrix, or it was like classic sutra. He said that you have the what is it called? You have the You have, let's see, I forget the word that he used. You have like a statement, thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. That was Hegel's classic formula in philosophy, Western philosophy. So the thesis is karma. People who want to enjoy this world. And they can act in a religious way and gradually get purified. Then you have the antithesis, which is jnana. For those who are sick of trying to enjoy the world, they negate everything in this world. And so it's the antithesis of enjoying the world, the opposite, is way on the other side. See, karma is here, and on this side is jnana. It is the opposite or antithesis of karma. So those people negate everything. And they're jnanis, right? The via negativa, they negate everything, they push everything away. They don't try to enjoy everything, they try to avoid the material world, avoid working, avoid relationships, avoid everything. Right? They want to just merge into the Brahman, right? Jnanis. And then the synthesis is in the middle. That's bhakti. So, this is the thesis. The antithesis. And the sin thesis. Sin means together. Or joining. And then here is bhakti. And close to bhakti, you know, is nishkam karma. Because nishkam karma means karma, enlightened work, or detached work, right? That's the meaning of nishkam karma. It means working without desire. Working without desire. And who's going to work without desire unless they have knowledge? They have to have some gyan. Right? To be nishkam. And they're doing karma, so nishkam karma is also a synthesis of these two things. That's why Krishna is telling Arjuna to do this, because it's very close to bhakti, nirgun bhakti. But Arjuna thinks that he's telling him to do something way over here by telling him to fight, because it seems like it's devoid of anything transcendental, or it seems like it's not enlightening. He feels that this is an impediment to his progress. But Krishna's not actually telling him to do this, gora karma, this horrible work, ugra karma, right? But he's telling him to do this kind of work, which is right close to bhakti, in the middle. So I'm going to finish this commentary now. The ultimate goal is Krishna, because the philosophers who are sincerely searching after the absolute truth come in the end to Krishna consciousness. This is also stated in Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam Janmanam Mante. The whole process is to understand the real position of the self in relation to the super self. The indirect process is philosophical speculation, by which gradually one may come to the point of Krishna consciousness, hopefully. And the other process is directly connecting everything in Krishna consciousness. Of these two, the path of Krishna consciousness is better because it does not depend on purifying the senses by a philosophical process. Krishna consciousness is itself the purifying process. And by the direct method of devotional service, it is simultaneously easy and sublime. So it's a lot easier and a lot more pleasant and pleasurable to perform
devotional activities than to just sit and study philosophy. As you can see, they're studying philosophy for 3 hours, and maybe more easy just to, you know, chant and dance and sell some books or, you know, whatever, what you usually do. But because we feel that we're coming closer to Krishna, then we still feel, you know, some excitement that, okay, now I'm starting to understand what Krishna's talking about. So it's not really so bad. It's divine, devotional philosophy. That's why we call it bhakti shastra. Right? It's not jnana shastra or karma shastra. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that regulative practice, or he calls maryada. You know this word maryada? Right? Maryada can be established by jnana yoga for the jnani, because his heart is pure. Those who lack purity, however, but are searching for the means to attain maryada, they should follow nishkam karma, which is offered to me. When the nishkam karma yogis begin to purify their hearts, they too become jnanis, who can in turn become liberated by bhakti yoga. In other words, there's one thing after another. Because the traditional scenario is first you engage in karma, then you make knowledge and advancement, you go to jnana, and then gradually you can go to bhakti from there. Okay? So, it's a matter of adhikar. If the person has a pure heart, then he can slot right into the jnana yoga practice. And if he's not so pure, he should do nishkam karma. And if he's not pure enough for that, well, we'll get to that in the next section. Then he should step down even a little further. Maryada means like... Adhikar means eligibility. Maryada means like regulative rules, or like rules and regulations, which, like Ramchandra is called Maryada Purushottam, right? He's the lord of rules and regulations. And Krishna is called Lila Purushottam, he's the lord of transcendental pastimes. And Lord Chaitanya is called Prema Purushottam. He's the God of love. He distributes love to everyone, prema to everyone. So now you get an idea, right? Because Lord Ram, he was very much fixed in following Dharma, the rules and regulations of Dharma. In order to get people established first in Dharma before Lila Purushottam comes and starts bending those rules. You know, to bring them to a higher level, above just the Maryada. So basically it just means rules and being situated in Dharma by following the rules. So those who want to attain Dharma or Maryada, and they're not pure enough to, their heart's not pure enough to do Jnana Yoga, then they should do Nishkam Karma. And then gradually they'll get purified, attain knowledge, and then they can get liberation and perform bhakti yoga. In one sense, yeah. Because the goal of nishkam karma yoga is to get jnana, knowledge, realization. But we're not talking about jnana yoga, we're talking about realization or wisdom. Well, see, the word jnana or karma has a great expanse of meaning also. When we say jnana, we don't just mean jnana yoga or brahmavadis or mayavadis, right? We also say divya jnana vidhi prakashito every day. We're praying for divya jnana, right? So jnana is not bad. It's good. If we perform our devotional practices and we realize we're not the body, then that's good, right? So Of course, in our practice, we want to realize Krishna and feel love for Krishna and attachment to Krishna. But in that, we also realize our sarup, which includes the fact that we're not the body. You know, that's our definition in the Bhagavatam. Muktir hitvanyata rupam sarupena vivastiti. So we realize we're not the body. Anya rupam and swarupam stitihi. We become situated in our real position. And that is mukti for us. So mukti, although it has a bad connotation, like mayavadis and mokshavadis and brahmavadis and impersonalists, but for us mukti also is good. Right? So similarly, the word jnana can have good and bad connotations. Okay? You know, just like, you know, you can use a knife for killing somebody, or you can go in the kitchen and cut vegetables with it and offer them to Radha Kunja Bihari. So everything has different, you know, uses and purposes, and they're usually good and bad. So, wait. Now, we want to finish the section, okay? Because otherwise we'll get bogged down. Krishna will begin answering Arjuna's question by the following seven verses from 3 to 9 to explain the defect of his desire to renounce his duty. Okay? From text 3. I didn't mention that yet. Krishna will begin answering the question of Arjuna in 7 verses, which is this section, and explaining the defect of his desire to renounce his duty. So now Krishna will explain that premature renunciation will not bring purification nor liberation. In other words, Krishna is going to explain that one whose heart is not pure cannot just renounce his duties and act as a jnani, but rather he has to perform his duties. And then this way he can become pure. Because jnana doesn't come from renunciation unless you have a pure heart. If you try to renounce prematurely, then the jnana won't come, if the heart is not pure enough. Okay. Let us chant this verse. Nakarmaramanarambhan naishkarmyam purushosnute nacha sanyasanariva sindim samadigacchati. Not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction, nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. So again, we're talking about adhikar. Unless the heart is pure, knowledge won't come. And unless one works according to Shastra, then one won't obtain naishkarmyam, or freedom from reaction. The Shastra is there to help us learn how to work and live and become free from reaction, naishkarmyam. When one is naishkarmya, he gets knowledge. When he becomes purified from sins and reactions to sins, then he develops wisdom of atma tattva, atma jnana. So, renunciation alone will not bring knowledge unless one is already purified and has naishkarmya. Because then he could get more knowledge from renouncing. So Prabhupada explains all of these things in his commentary. Number 4. The renounced order of life can be accepted when one has been purified by the discharge of the prescribed form of duties which are laid down just to purify the hearts of materialistic men. Without purification, one cannot attain success by abruptly adopting the fourth order of life, sannyas. Without purification of heart, sannyas is simply a disturbance to the social order. This is a strong statement, a sutra. You can underline that sentence. On the other hand, if someone takes to their transcendental service of the Lord, even without discharging his prescribed duties, whatever he may be able to advance in the cause is accepted by the Lord. Buddhi yoga. Svapam apyasya dharmasya chayate mahatobhayat. You know what that means, right? Okay. Text 5. Nahi kaschit kshanam api jatu tishyata karma krit karyate havasar karma sarva prakriti jargunai. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. Nakshanam. Not even for a moment. Why? Karyate yavasha karma. He'll be forced to act. How? Why? Sarva prakriti jayargunai. By the modes of material nature. By gunai. It's in the tritiya. Gunai. By the gunas. Due to the gunas. Prabhupada comments, it is not a question of embodied life, but it is the nature of the soul to be always active. Without the presence of the spirit soul, the material body cannot move. The body is only a dead vehicle to be worked by the spirit soul, which is always active and cannot stop even for a moment. As such, the spirit soul has to be engaged in the good work of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it will be engaged in occupations dictated by illusory energy. Like in English, they say that the idle mind is the devil's workshop. Right? In contact with material energy, the spirit soul acquires material modes. And to purify the soul from such affinities, it is necessary to engage in the prescribed duties enjoined in the shastras. The prescribed duties actually engage those modes of nature and kind of neutralize them. From turning into something bad. That's why it is said, work now, samadhi later. Yeah. And at the end of the commentary, Prabhupada says, so the purificatory process is necessary for reaching this point of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, sannyas, or any purificatory process, is to help reach the ultimate goal of becoming Krishna conscious, without which everything is considered a failure. So those who adopt the sannyas order without the purification, their hearts are not pure, then they become absorbed in mundane activities, sinful activities, and instead of going up, they go down. So it's for this reason the Lord is speaking these verses. Text 6. Now he's talking about the mithya sannyasi, or the false sannyasi here.
Karmendriyani samyamya yaaste manasasmaran indriyartan vimudhatma mithyachara suchati.
One who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender, mithyachara, a false actor. It can also be translated as hypocrite or a rascal.
Okay.
So Prabhupada says, in the last sentence, such a pretender's mind is always impure, and therefore his show of yogic meditation has no value whatsoever. He makes a show of being a yogi while actually searching for the objects of sense gratification. And so such a person must be called the greatest cheater. Because he's cheating himself and he's cheating the other people too. So
I think that's clear. We don't need to elaborate. This is the bogus sannyasi, okay? Who's renouncing prematurely or with a false motive or with a wrong motive. But now you see the word two in the next verse, two, which means that, you know, but one who, indriyani manasa, niyamya rabhate arjuna, karmindriyai karma yogam, asakta sa vishishyate. So someone who does karma yoga, karmindriyai, and he controls the working senses, he's not advanced enough to control the gyanendriya, but at least he can control the karmendriya. Asakta sa vishishyate. And he's detached, he's not attached. So sa vishishyate, he's better, he's special than the previous person, the false sannyasi. Let's read. So here, actually, Krishna is glorifying grihasthas, believe it or not, in Varnashram Dharma. Because one who controls his senses in whatever dharma level he's at, he gets the mercy of the Lord. So grihasthas, they perform their duties according to the shastra, and they're situated firmly in dharma. They won't fall down or make mistakes because they have the strength of their shastric injunctions supporting them. So this verse actually glorifies Varnashram Dharma and the grihasthas who act in that dharma. So these persons will gradually progress and come to wisdom, or they'll come to jnana nishtha, the position of wisdom. Prabhupada writes, instead of becoming a pseudo-transcendentalist for the sake of wanton living and sense enjoyment, it is far better to remain in one's own business and execute the purpose of life, which is to get free from material bondage and enter the kingdom of God. The swartha gati, or the prime goal or self-interest, is to reach Vishnu. The whole institution of varna and ashram is designed to help us reach this goal. A householder can also reach this destination by regulated service in Krishna consciousness. That's it. Regulated service means maryada. Right? For self-realization, one can live a controlled life as prescribed in the shastras, and continue carrying out his business without attachment, and in that way make progress. A sincere person who follows this method is far better situated than the false pretender who adopts showbottle spiritualism to cheat the innocent public. Now here's the famous sutra. A sincere sweeper in the street is far better than the charlatan meditator who meditates only for the sake of making a living. And you know, that's true, people take advantage of the saffron cloth and they go and beg. When I was preaching in Ahmedabad in 86, I was going out door to door to homes and with another Gujarati devotee. And sometimes we would come, knock on the door, and suddenly the curtains of the windows would shut, and then we'd hear the lock on the door. The person would lock the door and shut and bolt the windows. And you know, I say, "Hey, what's going on?" I asked him, why are these people doing this? They say, and he told me, because there's a lot of people who get dressed up in saffron and they come around and beg, and they knock on the door, and then they're invited in, and then they case the place. Oh, there's a television, there's a VCR, or there's a, you know, or there's some jewelry. And then they have some casual conversation with the people. Maybe those people bring him a limka or something, and give him a little donation. And then he says, "So, how are you, and what are you doing, and, you know, it's getting hot now, and,
you know, soon a lot of people will be going to the hill stations. Are you going on vacation too? Oh, really? That's nice. When are you leaving? Oh, I see. And then in this way, you know, they get the information and then they break in the house when the people are on vacation. So when they saw us dressed in saffron, they just locked the door and closed the windows. And I thought, oh my God, wow. The saffron cloth has become so degraded that you have all of these clowns and cheaters and rascals dressing up in saffron and going out to cheat people, that now the cloth has the opposite effect. Instead of, you know, people respecting us, they think that we're thieves. You know, it was kind of shocking to me. You know, this was almost 20 years ago. So I think it's, you know, probably worse now. I don't know what your experience is, but that happened to me. In any case, you know, practically in every town, you know, you can go. There's some guy that gets dressed up like a Baba, and he sits there, and he gets his, you know, trishula, and he has his, you know, beard, and then he's got his little mandap, and he's got all the gods in there, you know, Mahadev, Kartikeya, Ganesh, Surya, even Jesus, and Krishna, and Ram, and Parvati, and anybody you can imagine. He just crams them all in there, right? He builds some kind of cement, you know, mandap or some kind of temple. And he crams all of the gods in there. And then the people walk down the street and say, oh, there's my god. And they throw in a rupee, right? And in this way, he's collecting, you know, more and more rupees. That's why he has all of the different gods. I'm sure you've seen this, right? So, but these kind of people, then they get the money and then just go and, you know, get some rotis, basically. Right? They're not doing any puja seva for all the Thakurjis inside of the little box. It's just for their, you know, roti seva and bidi seva. Right? So, and in this way, they make a bad name for everyone. So these are the charlatan, you know, mithyacharas. So that's why Krishna is saying that better if a person works, gets married, you know, better if that guy works, gets married, and he can start a restaurant and roll chapatis and sell them, and then, you know, he can also eat. Or whatever works, something, right? He should do something, not just be a clown wearing saffron cloth. Text 8. Niyatam kuru karma tvam karma jayo yakarma raha charida yatrapi chate na prasidya akarma raha. Perform your prescribed duty, for doing so is better than not working. One cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. So Krishna tells Arjuna, don't try to give up your activities and become a jnani. That type of renunciation will be useless. You would find it difficult even to maintain your body. Even a jnani must actively beg. But kshatriyas can't beg. Therefore, I tell you that your duty is to maintain the kingdom, collect taxes, and gradually advance on the spiritual path. Do your kshatriya dharma. Prabhupada comments, Lord Krishna did not want Arjuna to become a pretender. Rather, the Lord desired that Arjuna perform his prescribed duties as set forth for kshatriyas. Arjuna was a householder and a military general, and therefore it was better for him to remain as such and perform his religious duties as prescribed for the householder kshatriya. Such activities gradually cleanse the heart of a mundane man and free him from material contamination. So-called renunciation for the purpose of maintenance is never approved by the Lord, nor by any religious scripture. But then Arjuna says, but a living being becomes bound by karma, by activity. So why are you asking me to do this karma marg? So then Krishna answers with the next verse. Yagyartat karma no yatra loko yam karma bandhana
tadartam karma kanteya mukta sangha samachara.
Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu should be performed. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction. And in this way, you will always remain free from bondage. Tad artam karma kanteya, for his purpose. Bhagavan ke liye, not for your own sense gratification. But when you do it for his sake, then you get free from karma. When you're detached from the fruits, then you become detached from the karma also. When the karma is offered for Bhagavan, then the reaction goes to Bhagavan. And it doesn't affect him. He just destroys it all. But if you do the work for yourself, then you get the reactions. And you're not Bhagavan. So then you have to suffer. So when you do the work for Bhagavan, then Bhagavan gets the karma and you get the yoga. And when you do the work for yourself, you get the karma. And there's no yoga. Again, Prabhupada writes in his commentary that this is the great art of doing work. Right? Before it was karma kaushalam. In the previous verse, that was in chapter 2, I believe, right? Karma kaushalam. This is the great art of doing work, and in the beginning, this process requires very expert guidance. One should therefore act very diligently under the expert guidance of a devotee of Lord Krishna, or under the direct instruction of Lord Krishna himself, under whom Arjuna had the opportunity to work. Nothing should be performed for sense gratification, but everything should be done for the satisfaction of Krishna. This practice will not only save us, or save one from the reaction of work, but also gradually elevate one to transcendental loving service of the Lord, which alone can raise one to the kingdom of God. So this is Bhagavad Arpita Karma, Nishkam Karma Yoga. So that's the end of this first section. And now Krishna is going to drop down and downshift. You know, when you're driving a car, put the clutch in. You downshift and you into second gear, right? So then the car kind of goes slower, right? This is what he's going to do now in the next verse, starting in the next section. Okay, so but now so far he's been talking about Nishkam Karma Yoga. Yes? Questions? Well, if he offers the japatis to Bhagavan, then he's doing verse 9.
Because obviously it's under the direction of the spiritual master, right. That implies that the person is already in search of knowledge.
Right.
And he approaches the spiritual master and is engaged like that. So there's actually quite a big step from where he's at. He's not renouncing, he's not able to renounce, and he's not purified, he has no realization. And then he comes to realization to accept the spiritual master and...
Well... You want to say that again, for the record?
I'm not sure if it records from here.
It doesn't record from that, the question? No? Oh. Only from here. Okay. Oh, I thought that the whole thing was we were recording questions. Okay. So, he's saying that if a person, that this verse 9 seems like a big step, because before it was saying that the person's attached and he can't really... He doesn't have enough knowledge to practice, to become detached. But here, if he's offering everything to God on the direction of the Guru, it means that he's searching for knowledge. He must have some knowledge. And why can't he just become detached? So, is it? This is basically your idea?
Yeah.
But... Okay, if somebody's following Shastra, because the whole idea is that there has to be faith in Shastra. And in order to perform your Swadharma, you have to have the scriptural injunctions. The Shastric injunctions must be there. So that some knowledge is there. And if you're absorbed in the shastric injunctions, then probably you have some teacher or guru who's teaching you how to, you know, apply that. Which thing for your life or something like this. Because in general, you know, we have a guru, whether it's in the village or in the town, or it's a kula guru or some kind of, or brahmanas in the village, somebody is giving some kind of knowledge for the persons. So they have some knowledge. And nishkam karma means to offer the results of your work to the Supreme or to at least some higher cause. And generally, traditionally, we see that they give it to some deity. So if they're giving it to Vishnu, they're giving it to some deity, they have to offer it to somebody, either Surya or Ganesh or Mahadev or at least Kali, Bhadra Kali, Durga. So then if they have a little more knowledge, then now it's just saying that, okay, instead of offering it to them, offer it to the supreme deity, Vishnu. Because if you offer it to him, then you get no karma at all. You're completely free. So that's not too much of a big jump. And that is the conclusion of this section. That the nishkam karma should be Bhagavat arpit nishkam karma. It could be, I guess, deva arpit nishkam karma. But better if it's Bhagavat arpita nishkam karma. Yagya by Vishnu. So Yagya is, Vishnu is a name for him. Yagya is a name for Vishnu. So actually Yagya means offering or making a sacrifice means to Vishnu. So if they, you know, if they read that sutra, then they can understand at least that. Actually, even in the demigods worship, there's always an offering for Vishnu. So then they have to chant the Vishnu mantra. But it's not like that for everyone else. Only Vishnu, he always gets something of the offering to the for the puja, to the demigods.
Even the verse 7, the example of giving of chapati, he is not attached to the fruits there. He is only attached to the work. Instead of becoming a bogus renunciate, he is told to do work to which he is attached, but not the fruits.
Right.
Probably he may not be offering to the Lord, but he is detached from the fruits.
Well, then he has to be giving the fruits to somebody. And, you know, on a lower platform nowadays, people aren't so religious, so okay, so maybe they're giving some philanthropic organization to help the poor, suffering people in Biafra or in, you know, or in Bangladesh, there's maybe some floods or Orissa or something. Yeah, that can help too. That helps, yeah. Because it's sattva karma. Yeah.
Prabhupada said that 50% we have to give. So is this something, apart from the Guru Goswami example, is there any Shastra basis for this? Or what my basic question is, what makes karma nishkam? Not be attached to fruits means the renounce the fruits. If yes, then what percentage and how is that decided? Because at present in the congregation it's quite subjective.
In the congregation.
That's what I heard everywhere. So, what actually makes the karma nishkam?
Well, actually, nishkam karma means that it's supposed to give all of the fruits to your deity, your favorite deity, your Ishtadev. So, and of course, you need, that means, you know, it doesn't mean that you just kill yourself and, you know. But it means that the income
whatever is above, you know, your survival level, which is different for different people. Because the more attached that they are, their survival level is higher, higher, higher. Some have a, you know, a 5-bedroom flat with a color TV and a Mercedes, you know, by the sea, Jai Jagadish Hari. So, and other people live more simply, and then they can give more. At least they can. They may not give more money, but they will give more of a percentage of what they make. Right. So, I mean, Bhagavan's not concerned with how much money you give, but how much percentage you give, because that means how much sacrifice you're willing to make and how simple you're willing to live. And of course, you know, and everyone has to do what's comfortable for them. So it's not like anything by force. 50% is what Rupa Goswami did. Right? And Prabhupada mentions that. So we're followers of Rupa Goswami, so we follow his example. That he gave 50% to spiritual life, which includes sadhus and like temples. And then 25% for emergency, 25% for the family. That was his breakdown of the percentage. Now, so generally 50% is the desired percentage. However, to confuse matters a little bit further, if you look in the TKG's diary, Tamal Krishna Maharaj's diary, you'll see that there he writes that Prabhupada told him at a certain point that 50% doesn't mean just 50% of the person's income, but it means like 50% of what's left after he pays the bills, basically. If I can remember, that was, I believe, what it was mentioned. So that's a whole, you know, that's a different way to do it. Of course, maybe Prabhupada was in a very merciful mood in the last few months of his life. Because previously he said 50% means 50%. So anyway, I think there's a little leeway for that, and that's probably why there's some differences of opinion also in the congregation.
What constitutes Nishkama Karma Yoga for brahmacharis?
Brahmacharis have to be on the least the level of Nishkam Karma, because they don't get any fruits from their work. They don't. You pay any of these boys? No. So they have to be Nishkam Karma. Otherwise, they won't. They'll, you know, jump out the window after a few weeks. They'll feel frustrated. So that's the bare minimal level for brahmacharis living in the ashram.
In addition to this question, yesterday we were discussing that how the person, he may like some service, he may do that. But here we just saw that work done for the satisfaction of Vishnu is to be performed, yeah, should be done, otherwise it's binding. So there he is doing the service like the driver. Yesterday we were giving an example of somebody likes gadgets.
Oh, yeah.
So how do we reconcile the work?
Well, okay. He's talking about predilection, you know, brahmacharis, if they're supposed to give up the attachment to the work, or then if they're supposed to be so detached, then yesterday we were talking about them doing the work that they like. So how can we reconcile these two ideas? Well, first of all, nishkam karma, there's still some attachment to the work, but there's no attachment to the fruit. You understand? So the basic level of a brahmacharya is nishkam karma. Bhagavat arpita, nishkam karma yoga, which is close to bhakti. And so in nishkam karma there's still attachment to the work. That's allowed. But there's no attachment to the fruits. In other words, you know, the example of a Kinchana Krishna Prabhu, you know, playing around with the, you know, gadgets and stuff. Okay, he may like that, but he's not going to demand payment from the temple for fixing, the amplifier, right? So therefore, he's doing what he likes to do. Not just that he's, mad after, fixing gadgets. So, although that may be sometimes true in some cases. Not in his case, maybe, in some other people's case. But, in other words, he's doing what comes natural to him. So therefore, he's engaging his God-given proclivities in the service of the Lord. And God is the one who gave him that proclivity, and he's giving it back to God. So that is a form of yoga or bhakti also. So that's nothing wrong with that. If the person, however, is so attached to a particular type of work that he refuses absolutely to do any other thing, then it's a kind of fanaticism and it's too much. I remember when I was a temple president in the Philippines, I was a brahmachari who just put on white and just changed my ashram. And I didn't really know about grihasthas, so I was still running the temple. Although I was wearing white, I was still running the temple like a brahmachari would. And I didn't really have any experience, hardly any, or realization about dealing with grihasthas. So one grihastha came to the temple, and he said, I can make sankirtan bags for the sankirtan devotees. And I said, wow, great. Get it, Okay, how much do you need for the materials? And, he said, well, whatever. So much. I said, okay, go to the treasurer and get that and you make the bags. He made 12 bags, came back the next week, gave the bags, brought them into my office, showed them to me, and they were real strong. And I said, wow, this is great. Thanks a lot. And, okay, Haribol. So now, the program's going to start and like this. And, we walked out of the office and he was kind of, like this. And I didn't even notice. But then that person didn't come back for months. And I said, and I asked the devotees, what happened to that guy? He was so fired up, and he was making these bags. Whatever happened to him? He disappeared. And I said, well, he was a little... burnt out, he was frustrated, I said, why? He said, well, they told me, actually he was expecting that you would pay him something for making this bag. I said, oh, what? I didn't know that. He wanted money? Why didn't he just tell me? But I never even thought, because, brahmacharis, they never get paid for anything. So, and this was 1984, it's like 20 years ago, so... And no one got paid then, it was like ever, very rare. So then I said, oh, I didn't know that. Okay, right. All right, some people want money and other people, okay, I would have paid him something, I think, probably. Especially if he told me in the beginning, I would have thought, okay. And so then I quickly realized that there's different kinds of devotees. I mean, it's obvious, though, he was a grihastha, so he needs some money, but I didn't even think about it. It was so dull. And now there was another devotee that used to come to the temple, and he used to come... Okay, so this first example is an example of sakkam karma. It means he's attached both to the fruits and to the work. He didn't offer to do any work, and he wanted to get paid. So, sakkam, karma kanda sakkam, nishkam, da 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 da, gyan, ashtanga, and bhakti. Like we draw this thing again on the board, then sakkam karma is attached to two things: the work and the fruits. But in nishkam karma, he's not attached to the fruits, but he's still attached to the work. So here's the example of the nishkam karma wala. And he was a devotee, but he came to the temple and he said, I'm coming here, I want to cook the Sunday feast for all the devotees. Because I know how to cook, and I'm a Brahmin, and Haribol. I said, great, great, great. Come, you know, come on Sunday at around 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock in the morning, or whatever it was, and then you can cook. It's all yours. Just tell us what you want. Give it to this guy. Give him a list. He'll buy everything. And everything will be in the kitchen. You can go for it. Great. Okay, so he came in the kitchen that morning, Sunday morning, and the place was a wreck. There was dirty pots everywhere, you know. The floor was dirty. The counters were dirty. There was no clean pots, you know. He came into my office and said, the kitchen's a mess. I said, well, clean some pots then, you know. You're the cook. He said, nope, no way. I'm not going to wash any pots. I said, I'll cook, and that's all. No pots for me. I'm just a cook. Because I'm a Brahmin, you know. Come on, you know. I said, all right. So then I had to run around and find some, you know, devotees and say, hey, clean a few pots for him. And say, okay. So I said, no, then I asked him, so do you want to get paid? He said, nope. I don't want any money. But I won't do any pots. I just want to cook. Right, okay. So that's the next higher stage, right? He's a little more advanced than the other guy, right? Because he didn't want any money, even though he was a grihastha. He wanted to come and just... He said, no, I just want to do it as a service. I'm not trying to get money. Okay, good. All right, well. So this is the nishkam level, right? So now, a devotee, he's in bhakti. So the bhakti level is more detachment. Right? Because, you know, we can discuss jnana and ashtanga, but it's not so practical in our... Right? We don't have so much jnana yogis coming in and offering to, you know, meditate on and to study the Upanishads and chant, you know, the Chandogya Upanishad and, you know, to purify the atmosphere of the temple or whatever. So, but we have other kinds of... So devotees, you know, they come and so there was one devotee in the temple, so he comes to me and said, I'd like to do some service. I said, okay, great. What do you want to do? He said, whatever you want to tell me. Just give me anything. I said, okay, do you want any money? I said, no. Do you have any, you know, particular service you like to do? I said, anything you want to give me. Then I just want to serve Prabhupada and the deities. I said, okay, great. So that's on a higher level. Now all of them are valuable, right? Because I couldn't find anyone in Manila who was going to make sankirtan bags. And, you know, and if it was a karmi guy, he wouldn't know how to make them well. And he would charge me two or three times as much as this devotee. And, you know, where am I going to find a Brahmin who knows how to cook prasadam? You know, and who doesn't want to get paid. But he doesn't want to wash the pots. Okay. You know what I mean? So, but then the third person maybe is more valuable in one sense, right? He's more advanced. But they're all valuable and they can all be engaged. But they all have their own different levels of consciousness. So I very quickly began to see, you know, when you're a temple president, you have to deal with all these kind of different people. When you're a brahmachari, and you don't deal with these, you don't know what, you don't even know there's these different levels of mentalities. So Krishna's describing these different levels. These mentalities are found in the Vedic, you know, traditional Vedic scenario, which is karmakanda, karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, and bhakti. Right? This is a traditional way to come to bhakti. It takes a long time to come to bhakti. You go in by the steps, you know. That's the traditional way. You have to climb each step. Step after step after step after step. And it takes many lifetimes. You know.
Is that binding probably because it's not for pleasure of Vishnu? Or is it that if the Nishkam Karma is Bhagavat Arpita, then it's not binding? Is it like that?
Okay, this is what we're... Oh, binding to the material world?
Yeah. You said the work which is not performed for the satisfaction of Vishnu, cause of bondage.
Yeah, so if it's not to the Lord, then it's bondage.
Even if it is nishkam karma.
Well, that's questionable. That's debatable. Because the principle is that when there's no attachment to the fruit, then there's no karma. If a person is, you know, if a person is doing something and he's completely detached, and he's doing it as a, you know, maybe, I don't know, some example can you give? What kind of example?
Nishkam karma, somebody is working hard.
You mean in some philanthropic activity? Well, then it would just kind of, there's no specific statement, so then we have to just try to understand it. I remember I was doing that when I was a teenager. Once I went to do some volunteer work for the state hospital, right? And I was painting. Wait a minute, don't talk while I'm answering because there's no purpose to the question. I was painting the wing of the hospital and I didn't get paid. I was doing it as a volunteer service. So, but I noticed that I felt really good after I did it. I felt real, you know, light and happy and kind of, I guess what it was the mode of goodness. A little bit of mode of goodness was coming at that time. And I felt like I'm connected with the world and I'm useful and, you know, and I can't explain, but there was a kind of light, liberated feeling, you know, that's the mode of goodness, kind of an enlightened feeling. So that was, you know, I was a teenager, I was doing this work. The people that came from, people in the hospital, they came and they said, oh, what are you doing, young man? I said, oh, I'm painting this. Oh, you're one of the workers? I said, no, I'm just doing it as a volunteer. They said, oh, really? That's wonderful. Hey, Joe, did you hear this? And then, you know, they started talking. He's doing this as for us, just as a free service. Isn't he a nice boy? Oh, yes, he's very wonderful. And, you know, so people were also appreciating it, you know. So, to me, the mode of goodness is nishkam karma means sattvic karma, and sattvic karma is better than rajic karma. In rajic karma, there's definitely a lot of reaction because there's a lot of attachment to the fruits or the results. But in sattvic karma or nishkam karma, there's hardly any attachment to. There's no attachment to the fruits. There may be some attachment to a certain kind of work sometimes. But there's a lot less attachment. So at least we can say that if there is any reaction for that work, which there may be some, but it's very little. Because the person is acting in sattva-guna. And there's some enlightenment, and there's less attachment to the fruits. Accordingly, to the attachment, there's some reaction. With the attachment to the fruit comes reaction. So I would say, at least, there's very little reaction to such work.